shotglassdigital.com.
This is what you can look forward to on episode 102 of Skywalking Through Neverland.
Oh, imagine that, dueling piano film scores.
I just want to say shout out to Team Hoojib.
I'd kind of want to hear the Cantina Band as a heavy metal track. I think my new ringtone needs to be Journey to the Stars.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
There it is. Listen.
A billion years in the making.
Welcome to Neverland.
What do you know?
You'll laugh. You'll cry. You'll kiss $3 goodbye.
Hey, Skywalkers, we are back, and boy, did we miss you. We are on our Thanksgiving break still, so we're still on vacation, but we couldn't go another week without talking to you, Skywalkers. Now, just in case you're wondering, it is only 17 more days until Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Woohoo!
Oh, almost here. But first, before we go on to everything, gotta stop and say thank you to all the Skywalkers out there for coming back to
Skywalking Through Neverland.
And welcome to any and all new Skywalkers out there. We are the family-friendly Star Wars Disney podcast that brings you entertaining stories from creators and fans. This is Richard, and please, everyone, say hello to my Sheltie-loving wife, Sarah.
That's me. Oh, I think I'm in love with dogs now. At least Shelties who look like foxes.
Up until this point, you couldn't even go near a dog.
I know. I'm not allergic to them.
We are on vacation visiting your family, and they have a little Sheltie dog named Chewy.
Uh-huh. Oh, he's so cute. He's 8 months old. I love walking with him, and his little tail is swishing. And it looks like a foxtail.
We come back from a walk. Of course, we got to say the line, Chewy,
we're home. Oh, well, thank you, Skywalkers, and everyone for supporting our show throughout all of social media. If you're listening now, you're officially a Skywalker. And if you tweet at us during the show, we love that. We are at Skywalking Pod on Twitter and also on Instagram. And if you tweet at us, you're officially a Tweetwalker. So you can be a Skywalker and a Tweetwalker all in one. Isn't that exciting?
That's very exciting. What's even more exciting is we're recording remotely. That's right. We sound a little different. It's because we're on our iPhones.
Yep.
And we're recording this not from Long Beach, California. We're recording this from Sussex, Wisconsin, where it is very, very cold. In fact, we're looking out the windows right now, and if my eyes don't deceive me, I think I'm looking at wampas and tauntauns.
You know what? On our Star Wars app on my iPhone, it's Alderaan out there.
That's not Alderaan. That's Hoth.
No, but it says Alderaan. It says enjoy the weather while it lasts.
I'm looking at a one-eyed wampa right outside the window.
You think you're having delusions.
No, that's a one-eyed wampa. And he's mouthing the words, have you seen this boy? And he's showing a picture of Luke Skywalker.
He's on the hunt.
I rolled in a Terminator 2 and Star Wars reference right there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, coming up on this week's show, Richard, it's the music show.
It is.
Yeah.
And we have a very special guest today. His name is Tom Amin.
Yes, many of you may know him from his Disney albums where he plays popular Disney themes on piano, either from the movies or even the parks. But on December 7th, he's releasing his very first Star Wars themed album called Journey to the Stars. Very appropriate name. I love that.
And we also talk with our good friend Kevin Rader Nerd Reitzel about getting ready for the Star Wars Saga movie marathon that leads up to The Force Awakens.
Yay.
So jealous. And he gives us his survival tips and what he's looking forward to.
That should be fun. Yeah, we also have another installment of our segment, Inspirations, the Music of Star Wars Rebels, where we focus on Kevin Kiner's score and his inspirations for the particular themes of the past week's episode. And we also have our shout-outs and our Skywalker of the Week.
And now here are things we want to share.
Things we want to share. Things we want to share. Things we want to share.
So there is something big we want to share this week, although we can't share it this week.
Uh-oh.
Sorry.
Are we teasing it?
We are teasing something we want to share, but we can't share it for another month.
Uh-oh.
Something that will...
affect our podcast?
Affect our... in a good way.
In a good way.
In a good way. Mm-hmm. So going any further would say too much, but it's going to be a fun change.
It will be a fun change. So we are looking forward to it. We're looking forward to telling you, but we can't tell you yet.
Give us a month. Give us a month and you'll know all about it. That's as much as we can say for now. But something else we want to share is information on our Force Awakens listener meetup on December 30th at the Downtown Disney AMC Theater.
Yeah, we're going to see the 8:30 p.m. show. And I know it's kind of late, but AMC changed the time on us for some reason. So
it was 8 p.m.
Yeah, it was 8 for the 2D, you know, version. Because we figure everyone's going to see this in 3D and yeah. So most people wanted the 2D version. And
was the popular vote.
That was the popular vote. So tickets are now available. You can go to our Facebook event page where there's more information and more details on how to pay and everything like that. So head to Skywalking Through Neverland on Facebook and click on the events tab. And there you will see the Force Awakens Skywalker movie meetup.
We got a good amount of people already signed up.
Yeah, we got like 40 or so. I know, I'm excited.
Yeah, so it'll be like seeing it for the first time again.
Right, with all your friends and Skywalkers. And ooh, and don't forget... when you come to a meetup with us, you will get our BB-8 Mickey Ears special meetup button. There might also be some other things that we'll bring with us. You never know.
I'm looking forward to seeing how other people react to different scenes.
Yeah.
But seeing it with a group really does affect how you're seeing it again.
Absolutely.
You get to share the experience with all your friends.
And we love that, which is why we're going to have these movie meetups probably again. I could see us doing a movie meetup for Zootopia.
Let's focus on one movie at a time.
I know.
So we will see everyone. We're going to meet up at 7:30 on December 30th, right outside the AMC Theater in Downtown Disney. So if you have any questions, please let us know. You can email us at share@skywalkingthroughneverland.com. And that is things we want to share, more or less.
And now let's meet today's guest, Tom Amin.
Be our guest, be our guest. Put our podcast to the test. Gather round the microphone and we will do the rest.
It is always exciting to hear classic Star Wars and Disney music in a way we have never heard before, especially when it comes from someone with such a deep level of respect.
Our next guest has reinterpreted classic Disney songs and film music into piano compositions, and on December 7th, he will release his first Star Wars-inspired album called Journey to the Stars. So now let's journey over and meet piano maestro and composer Tom Amin.
Hey, Tom!
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I am so excited to be here. I mean, it can't be a more perfect marriage of Disney and Star Wars. I love your podcast.
Sarah, did you hear that? He is so excited that Tom's meowing.
That is my cat, Bobby. For those that follow me, they know my cat very well. He's quite a talker. So I will settle him down. So he doesn't bother us.
I want to hear Bobby's rendition of Duel of the Fates.
There you go. He loves to be on podcasts, so he might chime in now and again.
He's going to podcast bomb, isn't he?
Exactly.
All right. Well, you know what? Before we get into Bobby's interest, Tom, let's hear some more from you and how your Star Wars and Disney fandom started.
Well, I was a huge fan of Disney since I was a kid. We were raised with Disney films, and of course we love them. And I fell in love with Freaky Friday and all of that, you know, all those old. And do you remember there was a film movie, not a lot of people remember, but it was called The North Avenue Irregulars. Do you remember that movie from the 70s?
Is this live action or animated?
It was a live action movie about a group of people. I think it was a group of church ladies that were trying to save a church or something. I can't remember. I just remember loving it.
Well, we may need to add this onto Step in Time.
Yeah.
And The Cat from Outer Space, like all old movies we love. But I started becoming more aware of music when I was about 11 or 12. And so my parents, to start me out, put me in a group lesson just to see if I'd like it. But all the music that we learned, it was like a 10-week summer course or something, but all the music we learned was Disney music. So I was starting to learn like the Mickey Mouse Club. And at the time, you know, I'm dating myself, but, you know, this was like 1970 something. So all right. Pete's Dragon was very popular. So we were learning like those songs, Mickey Mouse Club songs. So it was kind of like my introduction to Disney music then. And of course, I absolutely fell in love with it. I mean, I love the melodies. I love the words. It was really cool. So that started my love of Disney then. And of course, it just cemented itself. You know, in 1989, with the renaissance of all the movies that came out, Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, and that's when it just really solidified itself for me. And I was completely in love with Disney. And of course, we had gone to the theme parks as kids, and we loved Disney World. So I've been a Disney fan for quite a long time.
Aww.
Wow. And then when did Star Wars come into your life?
Star Wars was 1977. It was I don't think it was opening weekend, but we went. My family took us. My parents took us. It must have been the weekend after, 2 weeks after it opened. It was so packed. We had to sit. I remember sitting right up front. We had to sit in the first row, like, and look up, you know, like which was awful. But as a kid, I loved it. And just to hear that score coming through, the scrolling letters, which I don't think we had seen before. And then the first Star Destroyer, like, coming across the screen like that.
Right.
Was just, wow. And it was just, it was like an action scene right from the beginning. And I had never seen anything like this before. I mean, granted, I was only, I think, 8 years old.
At this point, were you already into the Disney music and did the first couple of seconds of John Williams' score, did that really grab you?
You know what? I got to tell you, it's an interesting story because I remember liking it, but I was not. It didn't, the first John Williams score that ever grabbed me, because I think I was older and I was more aware of music, and this is when I started piano, was around 11 or 12 years old. It was the Superman score.
Oh.
I remember just some reason connecting with that score so bad, I mean, so wonderfully. And then I went home and we had a piano in the house, and my mom said I just started playing it on the piano just by ear.
Wow.
And that's how much I loved it. And then that's when they really started to get me into lessons.
That's awesome. You know, you and I have something in common because that film score was the first one I noticed. And I was like 4 years old. And I was like, I was in love with the Superman score. So
oh, yeah.
That's so cool. So you went home and like transcribed it on the piano without even knowing what transcribed means, huh?
Because I had started to take guitar lessons.
Oh.
And so I started to learn about music and theory and stuff. But for some reason, the piano, ever since that score I heard, and I went to the piano and tried to sound it out, and it just clicked with me, the whole thing.
Wow.
Just clicked with me. And that's what started it all. Now, of course, you know, Star Wars is such a classic score. I mean, it's one of John Williams' finest. I think that and E.T. are just so well done. But he's the whole reason I'm in music, and he's the man, you know?
Yeah.
So you had this talent at a very early age where you could just sit down at a piano and play it just by listening to it?
I've been really lucky because I've always had a good ear. I can always sound things out. That came very naturally to me, which I'm really happy for, because I play a lot of music. Like when I play out at restaurants and private events, I have to play cover songs of songs they know. So I was very lucky that I could sound out most music by ear, and I don't have to buy sheet music. I just can do it, blah, blah, blah. But now the downside of that is I'm a horrible sight reader. I cannot sight read music. If it's got, I can do lead sheets, like jazz sheets, like if it's got chords and the melody, I can do that. But if someone puts a piece of music in front of me, I actually have to really study it and learn it and practice it. So it's a trade-off, I guess.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's like almost using two different sides of your brain. I think
you're right. I think you're right, Sarah, because I can't, I mean, it takes me a while to look at the note. I mean, I can read the music, but I can't just do it. I'd have to sit there and practice. Now, I know musicians that are amazing sight readers.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could just put the music down and they could play that thing note for note right from the start. And that's amazing to me because I don't have that talent. So that's so amazing to me.
Well, this is kind of like that old joke. How do you confuse a rock musician? Give him sheet music?
That's so true. So
your last two albums were Magical Moments and Magical Moments 2, which reinterpret classic Disney songs. What inspired you to do that?
Well, I got to tell you, because I love Disney so much and because I went to the theme park so much, I've always loved the music of the films, but also the music of the theme parks. I thought the music was such a great soundtrack to provide people with such memories of these rides when you're going there. Now, once I moved, I'm from Ohio originally, so we were always flying down to Disney World. But now that I live in Los Angeles, of course, we go to Disneyland, which I fell in love with after living here a few years, because at first, you know, when you first go to Disneyland, it's so tiny, it's so small, you know, compared to Disney World. Like, you go there and I'm like, where the castle's so tiny and there's not a lot of room. Like, but I've really fallen in love with it. And I think it's an adorable park. I love it. I think our Haunted Mansion ride, I think our Pirates ride is the best here. Our Small World, I mean, it's just, it's amazing here. And I love the Haunted Mansion overlay. So I've grown to love Disneyland, but I think the music that they play in the parks and the music on the rides helps tell the story. So I've always been into that, and I've always loved the theme park music, like Tomorrow's Child from, you know, Epcot, and Soarin', you know, for Soarin' Over California, and all, you know, the Kitchen Cabaret, like all these old songs from Epcot that I really loved. The Pirates ride, the Haunted Mansion song, they're all great pieces of music. And I thought, how would these sound on piano? I just wondered, because I would play around with them for fun, just for myself. And I thought, I wonder, you know, how could these sound on piano? And so I started to work with that. And I just happened to come up with the arrangements that I did. I think they turned out pretty good. I mean, I really love them. And it seems people like them because it got a great response. But that's how that all started, to think, how would these sound on a solo piano, you know, without words and kind of more like a mellow, popish kind of sound. I don't know. And I just felt like I wanted to try it.
Yeah, I was listening to some of your tracks, and one of my favorites is the Haunted Mansion.
The Grim Grinning Ghosts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you ever slip that when you're playing live? Do you ever just slip that in and see who notices?
I always do. And people go crazy because people recognize that, and they recognize the Pirates of the Caribbean song.
Especially around here, because you live in L.A., right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I bet if you slipped it in, if you were like in Austin, Texas, you wouldn't get as many people going, oh, I know what that is, you know.
That's true. Yeah, I would put the haunted, I would do like a Halloween medley for Halloween, and the Grim Grinning Ghost was always in that medley, always.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think that song just screams to be played on a piano because it has that haunting... I'm not musically inclined, so what do you call when you're really, you know, banging down? When you're really, I failed music history, music theory. But I'll just say, I love the way you interpreted the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, it's just got that really haunting, somber melody, but you could play it really softly, but it also works when you play it really loud. Right. That's what I like about that melody. It can work either way. It's just perfectly written. So I think it sounds good either way.
Okay. Now, what is your most downloaded track so far? Are you able to see that?
I can see that on iTunes, and it's Fantasmic. That's the one that people... Yeah, it's Fantasmic. People love, and then they also love... Oh my gosh, what's the other one? I know it's Fantasmic.
I think it's a combination of them loving the Fantasmic theme and because it's our opening title track.
There you go. That's it. It's, I mean, Fantasmic is, you know, classic. I mean, you know, that show, come on, it's awesome. So I think that's the most downloaded one. And then I think it might be like Pirates or something like that. I can't remember, but I do know Fantasmic gets me the most hits.
Okay, what about Let It Go?
You know, Let It Go, not as much. I don't know. I think people with Let It Go, they like to hear the song.
Yeah.
You know, with the words and everything.
That opening piano lick is like so powerful. Everyone, like, as soon as that comes on, you hear it, like, when you're watching the fireworks, you know, you hear all across the park, gasps from everyone, just kind of going down the street.
It's so awesome. I have to say that I play that song out as well. And I have a regular gig at a restaurant here in Studio City, California. And we get a lot of kids, like families and stuff on the weekends for brunch. And first of all, that's all the girls, that all they want to hear is Let It Go. That's it. And so I play it all the time. But you have to understand, not only do the little girls love it, but all the adults and a lot of men love it. Like, as soon as I'll start to play it, the guys will be like, yo, let it go. And like scream. It's hysterical.
Do you ever get people singing along?
I do. Yeah. It's really cute. So it's really neat to see like parents singing with their kids.
Yeah.
As they're eating their brunch. It's really cute.
You almost can't help it.
You can't help it. You just can't. Even I want to sing it as I'm playing it.
Yeah. We were at Disneyland last night, and as soon as every little girl heard the Let It Go song during the fireworks, they just broke out in the steps and the dance movements without even probably realizing it.
Yeah. Even little boys will start singing along.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. It's kind of like the Little Mermaid. It's like a part of your world of our time, of this time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm a part of your world was huge. And I remember I had to play that song for so many auditions for people. Because at the time I was doing theater, and a lot of the girls, the young girls, wanted to sing. That's all they wanted was Part of Your World.
That's funny. You know, that song, for some reason, that is the first song that I remember trying to memorize all the words all the way through. And when I finally got it, I was like, yes, I'm awesome. You know, I don't
It's so cool.
But it's so cool. But it's one of those hard ones because it's not a recurring refrain.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
Like different words all the way through.
Now, since these tracks are your own interpretation, do you have to get rights from Disney before releasing your albums?
Yes, you do. You have to actually contact them. I have a guy that I know there only because I've done this like 3 or 4 times already. So I contact him and say, look, I'm doing this album. I need the mechanical rights, which is basically they give you permission to sell them as downloads and on albums. Mm. So you pay a certain amount of money up front. It's not that much, but you have to pay for the rights. And then you're allowed, like say I pay for 250 downloads up front. That secures me 250 downloads. Now, once I exceed those, if like a song exceeds those, then I owe them money and I pay them every quarter. But it's not a lot. It's like 10 cents a download.
Okay.
So it's not too bad, but it's paying, and I'm totally into it because I'm all for paying the musicians who wrote it, you know, what they're worth, and I'm all into that. So I have no problem doing this. But yeah, you do have to get permission. And what's interesting though is because it's not a Disney sanctioned album, like they didn't come to me to do this. I came to them. I'm not allowed to use any artwork, like no fonts, no imaging, nothing. Related to their company and what they own intellectually. So I have to send them the covers before I'm allowed to print them because they just need to approve it.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So you can't sell these in the parks then?
That's one of my dreams, actually, is to sell them in the parks. And I've been trying to get some meetings with Disney. It's very hard. I mean, Disney, I mean, they're a billion dollar company all over the world. So they have so much going on and it's really hard to get into there. But I am trying. I would love to get these into the parks. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, I think it's nice because, I mean, it's such a difference from the actual music in the parks. You know, it's the piano only and it's just really nice. You can put it on as mood music and take a bath or something, you know, like it's great stuff. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. There's something nice about solo piano that's just very soothing to
yes.
me. And I think to other people, I love to listen to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just, not my own stuff, of course. Usually, do you know art? Like I never listen to my own music. it's weird. It's like when you hear yourself talk, it's kind of like, oh, you know, and of course, as a musician, once you get the stuff done, you want to go back and do it all over.
Oh,
and record. It's that thing that you just have to like, let it go, you know, what I mean? Let it go. So I rarely listen to my own stuff, but I do like listening to other piano music. It's just so soothing to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, speaking of soothing, we heard a couple of preview tracks from your next album, Journey to the Stars. So tell us all about this.
Well, now this is my official Star Wars album because I've been such a Star Wars geek and a nerd growing up with it. And of course, as you know, I love John Williams' music. I thought, why not try to do some of this stuff on solo piano? And see how it goes because, you know, John Williams plays piano and classical guitar. So he might compose some of the stuff like start on piano or guitar, because I got to tell you, the stuff lends itself very nicely to piano. The melodies are just so well written. They're beautiful. A lot of them are like really smooth and legato and connected. So they sound really good on a piano. Mm-hmm. And I just thought these would be really cool. A solo piano. And let's try to do different interpretations of like the Imperial March, May the Force Be With You, and the Throne Room, and even the Ewok Celebration I thought was kind of cool on the piano. Now, I rearranged them, of course, so they sound some of the tracks I do, I wanted to really pay homage to the original. So like for the Imperial March, I start slow, but then get really big and loud. But other ones, I just try to re-envision them, mm-hmm. but keep that magic of the original piece with it.
Okay.
But yeah, it's all Star Wars music. It's all the themes that I love.
Right.
Growing up. So I'm really excited to share these.
Yeah, we wanted to ask you, how did you narrow down your selections? Because there's so many to choose from that John Williams made great themes.
I know there is so much. What I started was with the main themes. I thought, you know what? Let's just do the main themes that I love and that a lot of people would recognize. I thought that was important. I didn't want to do a lot of the obscure kind of incidental music, which I would love to do, but I kind of felt I want this to be a representation of the Star Wars that everybody knows.
Okay.
So I wanted to start with like the main themes and of course go through like the Yoda theme and Princess Leia's theme and Luke and Leia and then all the other ones as well, like the Throne Room Suite that was the very first, it was the ending song of the first Star Wars Episode 4. So I wanted to do these things that I think people could latch onto and have them create memories for them or make them remind them of something that they've seen in the past.
So that really is the thread that ties all the tracks together, the recognizable ones that people have a nostalgic feeling toward.
Yes, that's what I kind of wanted to do. All the themes that like I knew as a kid. And so like, let's say a 10-year-old listens to this album, that they should hopefully recognize those themes as well. So that is the main thread throughout the whole thing. The main themes of the characters. And also too, that every song that John Williams wrote on, like except for one, is from the original films. The only song that I did that was from the newer ones was Duel of the Fates, which I had to put in there because it's one of my favorite pieces. And I thought I wanted to just experiment with it on piano and see, could you get away with it? Like, wow. What would that sound on piano? So I gave it a shot and tried it.
The background going meow 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 meow.
I know exactly. Meow, meow. I could put that in there, right?
Yep.
Exactly.
Was Duel of the Fates that one track that you just couldn't wait to interpret for your album?
Yeah, I was actually scared though a little bit. That was the last one I recorded because I really wanted to do it, but then at the same time I was a little scared. Like, is this going to sound stupid? Like, is it going to be dumb? Because you know that song is so moving and so powerful with just not the orchestra, but the choir behind it. So I thought, I wonder if I can do this. But I like what I did. I mean, I think it turned out pretty well. It's a driving piano piece. And I think it turned out pretty well. But that was the last song I did. I got to tell you guys, I was really nervous to do it.
Oh, but, really?
Yeah, I was. Because I wanted it to be as good as, you know, what people would think when they hear it.
Right.
How many variations did you go through before realizing, okay, this is the one?
Well, I knew that I couldn't do, you know, in that song, there's that theme that goes throughout there. But you can't do that on the piano when you're doing a bunch of other stuff. There's just no way to do that unless you overlay
right.
that track. And I don't do that. I'm very old school. Like, I don't believe what you hear on that album is what I could do live. If okay. I can't do it live, I'm not recording it.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. That's just my old school way. But so I knew I couldn't do that throughout the whole thing. So I just did like eighth notes instead and just kind of bump, 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 bump. In the left hand, I thought that drives it enough. And the chords in the right hand were good. And you, if you notice, when you hear it for the first time, you see I do that theme at the very end. I put it at the very end of the song. I do it.
Oh, nice.
Ever hear a cat walk on a piano?
Yeah, exactly.
I think if you had Bobby in there helping you out, that would have been just magic.
Right. Could be like a dueling piano thing.
With your cat.
Oh, have you been?
Well, that's a hook.
Have you ever been to a dueling piano bar?
I have. They're awesome.
Oh, imagine that, dueling piano film scores.
Oh my god.
Cool.
We're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about this later on.
Yeah. That would be cool because you could have someone doing that the whole time. That would be pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. I just got goosebumps. I really did.
I know. That would be cool.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a cool idea, Rich. I like that.
All right, hold on. We're going to jot this down. Dueling piano bar. with Tom and John Williams.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Good deal.
Cool. How did you go about translating like that John Williams music with the full orchestration to just the single piano? Like, can you give us another example, like perhaps with one of your other tracks?
Sure. I started with the melody. So I wanted to make sure the melody was good and intact. And if I wanted to embellish it a little bit and put my interpretation on it, how far could I go? What could I do? All that kind of stuff. So like, let's say, for example, the Ewok celebration.
Oh, now which Ewok celebration is this? Original, special edition, or Miko?
Well, there's two on the album. I did the one. Now, the one that was listed is called Victory Celebration and Ewok Celebration. That's what they're technically called.
Okay.
Now, the Ewok Celebration is the one that...
Okay.
That one.
Good.
I didn't know that was that. Was that called something else? I'm not aware of that.
It's called Ewok Celebration on the Return of the Jedi soundtrack.
Got it. So that's where I took that from. Now, that one... I thought it'd be fun just to try a little lighthearted version of that with not so much screaming piano, but just kind of lighthearted poppy version. And so that's what I took into that. And it's a very basic theme, and it kind of repeats itself over and over again. So I thought, okay, this might be good just to fool around with it a little bit, keep the main theme, but do a little bit of ad-libbing. And so it turned out pretty good, I thought. I mean, I like it. And now for the victory celebration, I wanted to make it kind of like the original. I really wanted that exciting, happy feeling, like, you know, the dark side was defeated, everything's good, etc. So I took the melody and I just kind of played with it and kept it kind of the way it was, but put a lot of fun piano chords underneath it.
Okay.
To kind of make it fun and exciting.
Is that one, the Victory Celebration, the one you hear for a special edition?
I believe that's one, because that's at the very end. Yes. Yep. That's the one. And I love that theme. I love that theme. So yeah, so that's what I did with that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I found it really interesting that you mix styles. Like had a waltz with the Cantina Band theme, which is more of a jazzy number.
Now that was fun. And now I had to put two versions on there because I wanted to put the original, but my interpretation of it being fast, like the original jazz, which I like how it turned out. And I kind of changed the ending and did like a kick, you know, like the... what do they call that music? Like the Rockettes kick line. I did like the bum, bum, bum at the very end of the song and then like made it fast again. So I wanted to do kind of really fun jazzy thing. But I also wanted to play with that theme a little bit and think like, what would happen if it was a ballad, or, you know, what happened if it was a waltz? And I thought, let's try the waltz thing to put it in 3/4 time just to change the feel a bit.
Absolutely.
And that's what I did. I think it's really cute. I mean, I don't know if people will like it, but I was tickled with it. I thought it was pretty cool. So I thought, why not stick that on there?
I'm not a fan of heavy metal music at all, but I'd kind of want to hear the Cantina Band as a heavy metal track.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
So get on that, Tom.
I know, right? That would be my next thing.
No, it's supposed to be a subtle hint, Tom.
I would love an 80s version, like the 80s sounds, like the 8-bit 80s sounds. Oh, wow. I think it would be fun, but with like modern drums underneath and stuff. I think that would be kind of fun too.
Well, you have heard the 1983 Miko Ewok Celebration, right?
I have heard that, yes.
Well, they mix the Ewok Celebration in with a rap. I don't know how they came up with that, but all right, let's run with it.
Or what's the original, the Star Wars that was done with a poppy, remember the trumpet? It was like, and it was like a four.
Oh yeah, that was also like Miko.
Disco sound.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh yeah. Oh, one of my. In fact, that's my ringtone.
There you go.
Just go Star Wars.
Yeah, we had the album growing up. That Miko and the original Star Wars.
I think my new ringtone needs to be Journey to the Stars. There's a segue. Now, tell us about this original Star Wars inspired track that you have included on your album, Journey to the Stars.
Well, the title track is actually a song that I wrote, because a lot of people don't know that I actually write my own music, and most of my other albums are all original stuff. So I wanted to kind of stretch my legs and show that a little bit on the Star Wars album, because I love the whole world of it so much. I thought, what if I put my own, you know, my own ideas into it? Here's what I can offer to the world. So I wanted to do kind of like, I did want to do a slower song, and I ended up writing a love theme, calling it Journey to the Stars. And it's just kind of like my contribution to the world of Star Wars. It's a really pretty theme. I like how it turned out. It's pretty simple, but it's kind of like a love theme that I can envision in the movie between two characters somehow.
You know what? You're making me think of the new novelization in the Journey to the Force Awakens novels, Lost Stars. It is about
star-crossed lovers.
Star-crossed lovers, exactly. Okay. All right. And I really like your title, Journey to the Stars, because it makes me think of that. Makes me think, of course, of Star Wars, and it's just a good Journey to the Force Awakens. You know, it all just ties in right there.
Exactly. Thank you. I really like it. I'm glad. I was like, that would be a perfect title for the album, and I would love to name the song that. So that's why I did it. I really enjoyed recording that. Yeah. I really did.
It has a feel of Across the Stars from Episode 2.
It does. Yeah. It's kind of got that like feel, that somber, beautiful, little bit haunting feel. So that's what I was kind of going after.
Nice. Sometimes the simple melodies are the best.
I agree. I agree with you. Yeah. So true.
Now, have you been imagining or even fooling around on the piano to what various themes from The Force Awakens might sound like Kylo Ren's theme or Rey's theme, BB-8's theme, or here's Luke Skywalker?
I know, exactly. I'm so excited to hear what he does. I'm not sure. I was trying to fool around a little bit just to see. Actually, what I did too one time is I took the trailer. You know what I mean? I tried to write some music to the trailer. Like, what would I write, you know,
instead? Fun.
It was pretty cool. I mean, there's nothing down on record or anything. It's just for fun. But I am so excited to hear the themes. I cannot wait. I wanted to include a new theme, but I tried to look. I don't think the soundtrack is out yet.
No. No, it comes out on the 18th.
It comes out on the, okay, because I wanted to get the soundtrack ahead of time and then do one of the songs from it.
Yeah.
That was one of my original ideas, but it wasn't out, so I couldn't do that. But I don't know, because John Williams is doing the score for the film. So I'm so excited to hear what he does. Yeah. I cannot wait.
Yeah, he's done, apparently.
Yeah.
He's done, and he had Daisy Ridley and Finn came to, like, the scoring stage, and they were posting on social media with him, like, these pictures, and I'm, like, sitting here so jealous. Like, I want to be there. But
That is so cool.
I know.
Oh, I love him.
But I love this age of social media that, you know, you can see that stuff.
Yes. A friend of mine just introduced me to Snapchat. So I've been playing with that, which is really fun. I still need to learn a lot about it, but that's another really cool way to share. Well, that's more, I guess, sharing with friends.
Right.
But you get to share little pictures and stuff that you're doing throughout the day. But social media is great. I'm always posting to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, but I'm mostly Twitter. I love Twitter. I mean, there's something about it that I love, but I try to do all three of those. But yeah, it's so cool that you get to see all these pictures behind the scenes.
So speaking of social media then, so what's your Twitter handle and where can our listeners find you on social media?
I am on Twitter and it's just my name. It's at Tom Amin, which is TOMAMEEN. And I'm also on Facebook at the same name as Tom Amin. All right, facebook.com/TomAmin. Now my Instagram is different because I originally did it not to be part of my career, but just for fun. So my Instagram is Tomster88.
Nice.
Tomster88, because that's my gamer tag. That's my gamer tag for all the games I play. I just go by Tomster88. I don't know why, but I just do. So That's on Instagram. But if you go, if people can go to my website, tomamimusic.com, and all the links and everything are on there.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. So your album comes out December 7th, correct?
December 7th. That's correct. We, for this time, you know, for the Disney albums, we did not have physical CDs. We just had the downloads. Now, this time around, we wanted to make sure we had physical CDs because a lot of people still want them. Mm-hmm. They want it as a collector piece, or I'm doing a concert. I'm doing a Star Wars debut concert that night at Vitello's Jazz Lounge at the East Spot Lounge in Studio City. So I'm releasing the CD. That's the first night people are going to be able to buy them. So I'm really excited about that. But it's nice because I'll be able to autograph them, like, and sign them, because that's what people want.
Yeah.
So that's why we got physical CDs made up. But it comes out December 7th, and it's going to be available. The CDs will be available online at CD Baby. And I will have the links on the website when that happens. And then, of course, if you just want the MP3s, they're going to be on iTunes and Google Play and Amazon, all that stuff.
And we can get all the information about Vitello's restaurant on your site. But do you happen to know what the address is?
You know what? I don't. I could look it up really quick. But it's in Studio City. It's on Tahunga Avenue. This is a nice part of Studio City where they have, like, this little shopping place. And there's, like, a Roma Cafe.
And this is right across from Universal Studios.
It's close to Universal Studios. The address actually is, I do have it, it's 4349 Tahunga Avenue, and that's in Studio City. I'm not sure what the zip is, but it's right by Universal Studios, about 5-6 minutes away. And it's going to be at the East Spot Lounge, which is their jazz lounge upstairs.
Ooh, fun.
So it's going to be, I'll be playing on a really nice baby grand. It's going to be wonderful. And I'm going to be singing as well. A lot of people don't know. But I did a Disney concert to help promote the Magical Moments CD, and I sang a bunch of Disney stuff. So I'm going to be singing, playing Star Wars stuff, and I'm also going to be playing my other favorite movie themes throughout history.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now, I know how you can up your attendance. If you if you sing the Star Wars theme like Bill Murray on Saturday Night Live.
Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars.
That'll do it, won't it?
Yes. Just go totally lounge singer with this.
Exactly, right? That's awesome. I'm excited because I'm also going to be throwing in some Christmas music because I'm going to be doing some stuff from White Christmas and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be a really nice event.
Sounds like a good time. What time does that start?
It starts at 8 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Is there a cover charge for this?
There is. It's a $20 fee to get in. It's kids are $10 and adults are $20.
And podcasters are how much?
Podcasters are free. How's that?
Oh.
Okay, there you go. I guess we'll be seeing you on December 7th.
Oh, that would be awesome if you guys came. I know it's a trek because I know Long Beach is kind of far, but that would be awesome.
You know what? We might be in that area because we got to stand in line for 24 hours for The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I think we could take a few hours out.
All right. You guys let me know if you come up for sure.
Okay. Okay. Definitely.
Awesome.
Yay.
Michelle will be jealous.
Yeah, she will.
All
she
the
will.
More reason.
I can't wait to hear your film music themes as well. What's your favorite film music as a last question in there?
Of course, John Williams. So I love a lot of his stuff. I do like E.T. is one of my favorite scores. I just love that score so much. We had a chance to see it actually this summer at the Hollywood Bowl. They do these concerts where they'll play the live score underneath the film as you're watching it on a huge screen.
Awesome.
So to hear that live was unbelievable. But I got to say, I love Back to the Future. Alan Silvestri's score on those films is brilliant. I love that. And I also love David Gruzin. He's a less known writer, but he did the music to The Goonies. Which is one of my all-time favorite scores as well.
That gets stuck in your head.
And it doesn't get out, does it?
No.
Once it's in there, it doesn't come out. But again, it was a great score for a great film. So I love him.
So
as
then,
well.
Then you don't just stick with John Williams. You go all over the place. And
I'll be
one
all
end
over
the spectrum
the place
to the other.
For my favorites, when I'm playing there. But it will be focused on Star Wars because that's the album. But yeah, I'm going to be doing a bunch of other stuff. I love all orchestra. Most orchestral stuff I love.
So from John Williams to Bill Murray.
Exactly. I love it all.
All right, Tom. Well, thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing you on December 7th.
Thank you so much. Again, thank you for having me on the podcast. I love you guys. And I'm so glad to be able to talk to you.
Skywalker shout-outs. Which Skywalkers get props from here in Neverland? Who was tweeted out? Shout-out. Who was photoballed? Shout-out. Who was shared a post? Shout-out.
We love to celebrate our Skywalkers who listen and comment and respond to our shows. It gives us such a thrill. So we want to give a big shout-out to some Skywalkers this week. Our first one goes to Chicafent, and they wrote an email, and it says, "Hey, hey, Richard and Sarah, my family and I have to congratulate you on your 100th episode. It was such a fun time listening to everyone share their favorite fan moments. The concept for the show was a great one, and we commend you for pulling it off. As we listened, it was surprising to realize how many people you have come in contact with and have inspired since you've been doing your show. You two have created a wonderful community of friends and fans that feels like a family. This episode was so fun that I've listened to it twice. Thank you very much for pulling these clips together and for sharing them with all the Skywalkers out there."
And then Chicafent continues by saying, "We'll be listening to episode 101 later today to hear about your Avenger Marathon and Season of the Force fun. Hope all is well and that you both have an awesome Thanksgiving."
Chicafent.
Well, thank you, Chicafent, and a happy Thanksgiving to you, and a happy belated Thanksgiving to all the Skywalkers out there.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's so much fun. I know we still are getting emails and responses to our episode 100, and it was such a cool episode, and really, that was one of the big distinguishing features of many people's moments. It's not about the movies, it's not about their experience, it's about their experience with others that really makes this whole fandom a family, whether it's Star Wars, whether it's Disney, whatever it happens to be.
It's blown up past just being movies.
Yeah.
It's now a community.
Absolutely.
Like you were saying, it's now part of one.
Yeah. And so that's why I get all teared up listening to that episode, because like every other one is talking about that. And it's like we're all a part of it.
Yeah.
Whether
yeah.
you're listening now, whether you're involved in something in fandom, it's so cool.
In fact, I've heard so many people say that waiting in line isn't really about seeing The Force Awakens.
No.
It's about seeing their family, seeing their friends, and being part of the community that just shares with each other and accepts everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really, really exciting. And we are also planning our follow-up to our 100 guests share 100 moments with another themed show like it. But we're going to be working on that in the next couple of weeks. So it'll be fun to announce, and maybe in January.
Really? Is this all in your head? This is the
things,
first time I'm hearing
I
this.
I have things planned out.
I know you do. That's great. Well, I do have to mention another tweet walker who tweeted. Ira Allen, who is at Ira Lilly on Twitter. She tweeted, "Skywalking Pod, thanks for nice long podcasts. They make my long runs much more enjoyable as I train for the Star Wars Rebel Challenge. Hashtag Team Hoojib."
Yay!
That was the first tweet we have gotten from at Ira Lilly, so thank you very much for tweeting at us, Ms. Tweetwalker.
And thanks for reassuring us that long podcasts are the way to go.
Yes.
Because we try to do short ones and it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. There's so much to share.
Yeah, next week is going to be really, really long.
Yeah. And we love listening. Speaking of training for the Star Wars Rebel Challenge, we love listening to podcasts too while we're on our way.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. I'd like to see what else is out there. Who's talking about what?
Yeah. In fact, on our 6 mile run, we listened to LiningUp.net's Q&A podcast, which is a new podcast out.
And they're the group who are organizing the lines,
yeah.
the lines over in Hollywood.
Yeah, so it was really fun to listen to that, especially if you're going to be in line. There's lots of info there.
And we'll be having some of those people on our show next week to give us updates.
Yes, indeed. But first, we have to mention who is the Skywalker of the week.
Matthew Clifton.
Matt Clifton, I think this Skywalker of the Week is long overdue. I think we thought you were Skywalker of the Week already.
But going through our notes and our blogs and our journals.
You weren't.
So sorry. Sorry,
but,
Matt.
But here you go, Matt. Now you can buy the shirt.
It's all one big commercial, isn't it?
Right?
So thank you, Rob Dellinger, for composing that long overdue jingle for Matt Clifton. And as you all know, he's the John Williams of podcasting. Now, let's see what musical journey Kevin Kiner took us on with the Star Wars Rebels episodes, Blood Sisters, and Stealth Strike. Two weeks ago, we started this really great segment called Inspirations, the Music of Star Wars Rebels. And we want to thank all the Skywalkers who wrote in and commended us on such a different view and angle on Star Wars Rebels.
Right. Because we know there's several podcasts out there that we listen to that go over the whole episode. So we just wanted to find our little niche.
There's just so much depth to each Kiner score.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, on the surface, when you're watching, yeah, it lends a nice background. But if you listen to these audio cues that are put up on StarWars.com, they tell a story in themselves. So we're going to go over that today.
All right, so let's kick it off with Blood Sisters.
Absolutely. Okay, so just as a reminder, since it's been like 3 weeks since this episode came out, in Blood Sisters, we get some of Sabine's backstory. So, while on a mission to protect a courier with information for the rebels, Sabine meets a warrior she seems to know. And her name is Ketsu, and she's played by Gina Torres, and she ends up being Sabine's Mando sister. So that's just a reminder of the episode. Now, StarWars.com provided the audio cue Ketsu and Sabine's history, which plays as we learn who these two are to each other in the episode.
It's great that we're getting some backstory on Sabine.
Yes, finally. I still want to know more, though.
Just the beginning.
It is. Now, before I play this track, let's get into a little background of composer Kevin Kiner, who we were lucky enough to talk to at the D23 Expo, and we learned some things about this. So, in the Clone Wars TV series, Kiner was told to write music very much removed from Williams' original trilogy score, because they wanted a different sound for that. So what he did, and what he told us he did, was delve into world music. Now, world music, it uses instruments from other countries outside of the traditional orchestral sounds, so that you get such a different tone to what you're listening to. Now, and it also lends that exotic feel to the action on screen, and it's a trick that composers use a lot.
And I'm so glad he went this direction, just so we could hear new Star Wars music.
Yes.
That has different sounds to it. So we're not hearing the same kind of orchestra we would hear from the traditional Star Wars soundtracks.
Right. So before we get into this, I want to play you an example of this, just so you get an idea of the convention that composers use. Like, film composers use this a lot. So I want to visit James Horner's soundtrack from The Mask of Zorro. Now, he loves using the shakuhachi flute. And I'm not sure if that's exactly how you pronounce it. It's a Japanese flute, and it's an end-blown flute. So if you know a recorder?
Yes.
Okay, it's like that.
I know it, just can't play it.
I know, right. So it's kind of like that, where it's end-blown, and you have only one particular scale that you can play, and it's traditionally made of bamboo, which I thought was interesting. But that lends that kind of exotic sound.
So it was made by Thurston Howell.
Who? Yes.
Gilligan's Island. Everything is made out of bamboo.
I still have never, ever seen Gilligan's Island.
All right. Okay, this is not a segment on Gilligan's Island. Let's talk about the music of Star Wars Rebels.
Okay, but we're doing that to talk about the music of Mask of Zorro. So now, James Horner uses it a bunch in The Mask of Zorro, also in Legends of the Fall and Braveheart, and he uses it to signify that different time and also uses it as a cry of emotion. So here I'm going to play you a little bit of The Mask of Zorro. The track is called Elena and Esperanza.
So now, how is Kevin Kiner using that the same way James Horner did for Mask of Zorro?
All right, so he uses two exotic instruments here. He uses the shakuhachi flute and what sounds like a mandolin underneath. It's a plucked instrument. And what he's doing is representing that Ketsu is from a different world and has a different way of thinking than our rebels. So let's hear a bit of this so you can get the feel of it. Here's the shakuhachi flute along with another exotic instrument. Sounds very Japanese to me. All the orchestral instruments come together and play the melody that the shakuhachi flute initially played. So when you listen to this whole track together, what it's saying to me is that it's representing these two characters that are different and at odds with each other, but eventually, because all the orchestral instruments, including the Western instruments, come in and play the same melody, they eventually unite because of a common bond, just like the instruments do. But at the very end of this track, when the low brass take over the melody, it sounds ominous, so where could this relationship really be going?
So where do you think Kevin Kiner got his inspiration for this particular track, Ketsu and Sabine's History? Do you think it came from a soundtrack or something that he pulled on his own?
I think it's more himself that he was able to compose this, and as a composer playing with the orchestrations, like, so which instruments that he used to portray.
So it's not like every theme we hear has got to be reflected from another soundtrack.
No, not at all. But Skywalkers, while listening to that track, did you think of another film score? I'd love to know. So please tweet at us at SkywalkingPod.
All right, good deal. Now let's move on to Stealth Strike.
Yes. So this is where Kanan and Captain Rex, they both have to work together, and they're dressed as stormtroopers, to save Ezra and Commander Sato from the Imperials. And they go on to an Imperial Interdictor cruiser, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so that was fun to see, by the way. I just want to mention that.
It's funny that Kanan doesn't mind getting into a stormtrooper outfit, but you have him get into a clone outfit?
Yeah.
Not going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Not going
to
happen.
It was so funny to see Rex in his stormtrooper outfit, like, always fidgeting. That was hilarious.
Because that armor is not really made for walking or running or sitting or standing.
No, it's not.
And I know from being part of the 501st and having to wear that armor, after 3 or 4 steps, you need to sit down for a while.
But you can't.
Oh, no, you can't. So now seeing Rex squeeze into that outfit.
Yeah.
It's very relatable.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on to the audio cue that StarWars.com provided for this episode, and it is called Newfound Respect. And this happens when Kanan has just saved Captain Rex, and Kanan now has respect for Rex as an actual person. You know, he doesn't see him as a clone trooper anymore. He sees him more as a person, and he's finally gotten past his initial prejudice.
Yeah, whoever saw this coming with Kanan saving Rex.
I know, right?
Instead of just saying, hey, I'd love to save you, but I'm too busy remembering the time when your kind ruined my life and killed my master.
Exactly. Yeah, that would be
If my mind wasn't going there, I'd be more than happy to save you.
Yeah, I found this interesting that also on this episode, you know, Captain Rex uses his military training to really get them through the Interdictor cruiser on a face-to-face level with the other stormtroopers.
I'm so glad we're easing Captain Rex into Rebels.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So I have a question for you, though, before I play this track. What are the instruments you think of when you think military?
Trumpets, drums.
No, that's what you want to think of.
Okay.
Especially for U.S. military. I mean, you know, we're bombarded with music. The snare drums play. You've got trumpets playing taps. You know, you've got trumpets doing all those fanfares for the military and stuff. So that's perfect. Now, as you know, Kanan, he's previously run from this militaristic thinking. You know, he wants to prefer to stay in his gang. He wants it to stay small. He's a loner. You know, like he and Hera had that big blow up. You know, she wanted to join the big rebels, and he was like, "No, I want to stay small with our little group, you know, and just do our own thing." So
he doesn't want a hand. He wants to do it solo.
Oh,
that's a Mad Magazine joke from 1981.
Oh, that's very cute. Yes.
He wants to play by his own rules.
He's totally against the military thing, right?
And rules.
Right. Well, kind of like someone I know.
Why are you looking at me?
So through this episode, Kanan, he learns that military training and respect can be a good thing. Case in point, when Rex gets them through the ship using that military training. And now this is mirrored in the music, because Kevin Kiner, he loads this track with snare drums and then ends it with a trumpet. He gives it that kind of all-American feel. So now let's hear a little bit of this track, Newfound Respect, from this episode. So you hear in this opening, it is loaded with snare drum. Now we got some smoother music. It kind of reminds me of an American president.
To me, it sounded like Taps meets Star Wars.
See, there you go.
I like how he rolls his own music into a well-known Star Wars track.
Mm-hmm.
It really ties it all together.
Yeah, exactly. So you have at the very end the trumpets playing Luke's theme, or the main theme from Star Wars. And I thought that was a very nice capper to this track. Now, the one thing that this really makes me think of is the Soarin' Over California score.
That's exactly where I thought you were going to go with this.
from Disneyland, because like that score, it mixes kind of melodic music with that more military music. Like, if you listen to this part when you fly over the military base in San Diego, this is exactly what happens. You had this beautiful soaring soundtrack, and then all of a sudden, you hear snare drums. Immediately makes you think of the USA, you know?
So this is a propaganda episode.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah.
I'm ready to join the rebellion.
Exactly. So as you can see, it's kind of Kiner's orchestration by using that snare drum, using that trumpet in Luke's theme instead of a horn in Luke's theme or a flute, say, you know, that it makes you think of the military. It makes you think of clones. It makes you see, it portrays Kanan's acceptance of this militaristic thing that the Rebels has become and that he has become a part of.
So it's a foreshadowing for Kanan.
Yeah.
All right, it's about time.
I know.
Can't be a rogue soldier for forever.
No, I gotta be part of something bigger.
And that will be to save the galaxy. So now, do you think this track is telling of Kanan's character for future episodes? That he'll be more accepting into this rebellion and the group. I know little by little he's admitting to himself that he's part of this new group.
Right.
He's been fighting it all along.
He has, but Hera is gung-ho into it, and as we know, they're space married, so he's pretty much has to go, yes, dear. Otherwise, there's going to be trouble.
I don't think he's there just yet in the whole, yes, dear, you're right, dear.
Yeah.
I think he's been...
He's definitely his own person.
No, from reading the Kanan comics, we know he's been on his own for so long, and that's right. What he's used to, and that's his survival level of comfort.
Right.
So now he's got to have a new way of thinking because the galaxy is changing and empire is getting more and more severe.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he's noticing the benefit of being part of a group. You know, he's training Ezra.
Well, I think he's been accepting of this a new group all along, but you know, like with most guys, they're going to be pushed into something.
Yeah.
They can't just say, oh yeah, there's the benefits. I like this.
Okay.
Yeah, they got to work it out in their own minds. Are you with me, fellas?
So I hope you've been liking this segment. Now, if you had anything to add, if this made you think of a different film score, please, please let us know. Tweet at us at SkywalkingPod. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
You're the busiest bee in the fan community. You get around the galaxy enthusiastically. You're 0.5 past light speed.
Force Awakens is now only days away. Some theaters across the country will be playing the full Star Wars marathon, equaling 13 hours and 14 minutes as a lead up to the premiere of the most highly anticipated film of all time.
Kevin Raider Nerd Reitzel will be skywalking through this marathon, and he is here now to tell us about his expectations and his survival tips.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Richard and Sarah, how are you guys doing? It's glad to be back.
Oh, we are as pumped as you are, and it's good to have you back.
Yeah, and it's fun. I just heard you on Cloud City Casino, so it's like, oh, from there, and then coming here, it's like, oh, hey, Kevin.
You're making the rounds.
Well, it was easy for those guys. Michael and Bruce, I just went over to their house. It was great.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Yeah, because you guys are all in Georgia over there.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Now, Kevin, let's talk about you a little bit here. Now, for those Skywalkers who have missed you on our last couple of shows, give us a little backstory on yourself as well as your fandom.
Well, originally from Santa Barbara, California, my Star Wars fandom started when Star Wars was released in the theaters. The first time I went was to the Arlington Theater in Santa Barbara, California. I went with my parents, and I was 6 years old, and I remember, you know, we'd gone to some movies before. We'd gone to the drive-in a lot, and of course, this movie, like a lot of other Star Wars fans, it changed my life. I did not know what I was seeing, and I remember asking all these questions during the movie, and my parents were like, "Be quiet!" But I was just like, I wanted to know what was going on. Who are these guys? Who are these robots? Who's the guy in, you know, the guy in black, and why is he scary? And so that started with Star Wars, and then. Every weekend for a long time when Star Wars was playing, my mom would actually drop me off at the theater and pay for me to get in. And when it was allowed for you to do that back then, it was safe. I would stay in the theater all day and watch Star Wars over and over again. And I went after school sometimes as well.
Wow.
Greatest babysitter ever.
And I remember the dark times too, as we talk about, you know, the late 80s and remember not, you know, not really getting much out of anything Star Wars, and then I remember Heir to the Empire came out for Timothy Zahn novels, and I remember getting those on audio cassette, audiobook, and listening to those, and then this Star Wars card game came out in 1995, made by Decipher, and I started playing that out of my local comic book shop at the time, and they also had released a Star Trek card game, and I was playing that as well, I excelled at the Star Wars game and the Star Wars one, that Star Trek and Star Wars one, and I even entered a championship circuit for the Star Wars one. And I won an all-expense-paid trip to Vail, Colorado in 1995 to participate in the first World Finals because they thought Vail, Colorado would go really well with the release of the new Hoth expansion. If anyone's been to Vail, Colorado, they know it's a ski resort. Uh-huh. And so... ironically, that was the first time I ever was in snow.
Wow.
Well, there's a stretch right there. You can go to the Northeast, or you could go to a ski resort.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But I was ranked number one in that game going into that competition.
Wow.
And there was over 45, 50 people from around the world that were invited to this competition, and I came in fourth overall.
Wow.
And that kind of got my name out there with the company, and then I volunteered for the company. I started running tournaments, Star Wars tournaments and Star Trek tournaments for them, and still playing the tournaments. And whenever they came out and did convention appearances, I would go down to Comic-Con and Las Vegas for these shows to help them out. And I did articles for Scry Magazine, which was kind of like the Bible for card game players. And eventually, I got hired by the company in 1999 when they announced that they were going to be releasing Episode One expansions and a separate card game for Episode One. And for the first year there, 1999, as well as going to the first Star Wars celebration in Denver, I was on the road for like 70% of the year, going around to all these retailers and conventions, teaching people how to play Star Wars.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And but it also gave us, it gave me a behind the scenes of the world of Star Wars, especially a lot of the characters in Star Wars. They didn't have names by Lucasfilm at the time, and so our company was allowed to name some of these characters that you saw in the background of the cantina or the Jabba's palace and such. And you know, one of the best things about that job for me was the friendships that I still have through that. A lot of volunteers that I helped bring on for our company that ran our games, and we'd give them free swag and stuff to help run tournaments for us. And I still friends with many of these people. And it's a subculture of Star Wars that we're all very proud of, and it's a very tight community.
That's the one thing about Star Wars. It's all about making friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why Sarah and I are going to be lining up in front of the Man's Chinese Theater for 24 hours in a couple of weeks, just because you get to hang out with all your Star Wars friends.
And yeah.
So looking forward to that. Now, I'm sure you're just as excited as we are, but you're taking one step. Unfortunately, we are not. You're going to go see the Star Wars Saga Marathon.
Now, yes.
When that was first announced, how many nanoseconds did it take you to decide that you're going to be doing this?
Well, first of all, it was something actually me and my group have been planning for over a year.
Oh.
The way that works is I have good friends of mine that live in North Carolina, my friend Scott, my friend Nathan, and we get together and play Star Trek card game and Star Wars sometimes. And they came to me at a tournament over a year ago. And they said, "Hey, you know, Kevin, you know, when the new Star Wars movie comes out, we want to come to Atlanta and see it with you," because they know how big of a Star Wars fan that I am. And I said, "Oh, well, I got some ideas. Let's do this. Why don't we plan on seeing the movie together? But before we do that, let's watch all six movies. Let's do a movie marathon." And I told them this. I said, "You know, lately, the last few years, AMC and Regal and all these other theaters, they've been doing these actual sanctioned marathons, whether it's the Marvel movies. I remember they did the Lord of the Rings Extended. I even went to a Die Hard marathon when the last one came out, the Batman marathon. So I've done many, many marathons through my life." And so I was like, "I bet you they're going to do a Star Wars marathon. But if they don't, we'll plan to do one either at my house or someone else's house here. And we'll make our own just in case." And so when the anticipation for the tickets were going on sale, they were not giving out any information a lot. You just knew that tickets were going to go on sale sometime around, I think it was October 19th, that Monday. And then there was the announcement that Monday night during football, they were going to show the trailer. They announced the actual marathon, I think the day before or that weekend, I think like on this Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, I think it was that weekend.
Yeah, and so we're like, okay, we got to do this. But they didn't announce at first what theaters were participating. So it was a mad scramble between all of us to search social media, listening to you guys, Rebel Force Radio, to see if anyone would find out about where these were. And I found out that only one theater in Georgia was doing it, and it's the Regal Atlantic Station in Atlanta that was doing it. And so, guys, you want to do it? Let's do it. And this is really funny because when they announced that tickets were going to go on sale that night during the trailer, I had a really gut feeling that I think the internet was going to explode when people were going to try and go online and buy tickets. Uh-huh. So I actually went down to the theater.
Smart.
That was, went down there myself. There was like seven or eight other people that were there to get single show tickets. I was the only one there to buy tickets for my group for the seven movie marathon. And I'm really glad that I did, because we were online trying to get on Fandango and we couldn't do it. So I popped down the credit card. I bought six tickets, and I'm really glad that I did that. And that's how it started. So yeah, to answer your question, right away we knew it was happening.
That's awesome. So you're going with six, or there's six of you total. Is your daughter coming too?
Actually, there's seven. There's a friend of mine that bought his own ticket online. The original plan, my daughter was going to go. But due to family reasons, she's going to be on school break, but she's going to be up in Kentucky with my grandmother-in-law, who just turned 100.
Whoa.
Wow.
Well, take her with you. She's going to love it.
That'd be awesome. But she's going to be spending time with her up there, with her grandmother as well. And, her health is failing. So I think it's a good time for them to spend that time together and stuff. So, but I am planning on taking her to see Force Awakens though.
Okay.
It's going to happen, yeah.
Now, how caught up in the Star Wars saga is your daughter?
Oh, she's caught up. I got her hooked when I started watching. I had her watch the original trilogy and a little bit of the prequels, but it wasn't until the Clone Wars and Ahsoka that really captured her attention, and of course Rebels. And then we've gone back and watched all the other ones, and we even made her grandmother watch Star Wars, and she's like, I'm really glad you guys like this, but I don't get it.
how old is your daughter now?
She's 10.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Oh,
perfect.
Perfect age.
Yeah.
Perfect age.
Yeah. She's really looking forward to seeing it with me.
Oh.
Now, which film are you looking forward to seeing the most on the big screen? The Force Awakens excluded.
Of course. Without a doubt, Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay. How come?
Return of the Jedi of the original trilogy has always been my favorite, and is still my favorite. That movie to me, first of all, the opening sequence with Jabba's palace is one of my favorite scenes ever, and I really like Luke Skywalker in that movie. He's got this confidence, and I just love his first appearance in Jabba's palace, and I love the lightsaber duel at the end with Darth Vader, and the dialogue between that as well. And it's just a great redemption story, and visually it's one of my favorites as well. But I'm also looking forward to seeing Revenge of the Sith, because the last movies I've seen on the big screen was Episode 1 in 3D. I saw Episode 2 in 3D in Germany for the celebration. I did not get a chance to see Episode 3 at Star Wars Celebration. I'm looking forward to seeing Episode 3 as well on the big screen.
Now, Sarah, what about you? Which film are you looking forward to the most seeing on the big screen again?
Like if I was going to watch a movie marathon like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think actually A New Hope, because it's so galvanizing in terms of when you watch it with people, everyone's so excited.
Right.
You know, like the Death Star blows up, everyone cheers.
That's a good point, especially when Vader is first revealed.
Yeah,
as well.
That too. And Luke, he's whining, everyone laughs. You know, it's like such, like for me, when I saw
To be fair to Luke, if your parents told you to go clean the droids and you weren't going to go see your friends, wouldn't you do a little whining? Come on.
I don't know. But
you know what? I got to watch Luke's back. All right. Go on.
Okay. So, yeah, when I saw it in the theater in 97, this was the first time I had seen A New Hope or any of the Star Wars movies on a big screen. And I remember that being like a big deal. Like, you're in this theater full of people and everyone's responding to everything that I had initially responded to, you know, just myself. So, once again, that was one of those from me to the world.
Yeah.
Moments.
It's a good community film.
Yes, yes.
Whereas Empire, I think people would get into high points to the extreme, like when Leia kisses Luke, they would just go nuts. I am your father. Like when we had seen The Empire Strikes Back at Celebration Anaheim, just the people that are, all the fans that erupted when Vader says, "I am your father." Was just huge. And the first appearance of the AT-ATs.
Yeah, but so what about for you? What would you
Attack favorite? Of the Clones.
Okay, yay.
That movie just screams to be put on the big screen. Yeah.
Especially the Sound of Music moment.
I love that scene in Attack of the Clones when Obi is chasing Jango and Boba Fett in the whole asteroid field with the sonic bomb. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the scene where Obi-Wan is fighting Jango in the rain. I've always loved that. To me, is classic Star Wars.
That is good. Yeah.
And I love that. Now, which versions, Kevin, are you hoping to see on the big screen? The originals, the special edition, the DVD versions, the 16mm versions, the 3D Phantom Menace?
Well, since I consider myself a marathon expert, I'd go through all of them personally. but since I know I'm not going to get that, they're probably going to be doing the special editions. I know they're not going to, but I would love it if they had the 3D versions.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I think they're going to be the special edition versions. Probably just stick with that. I think that's what it was advertised as.
Now, the special editions or the special deluxe editions?
Probably, I what's the newest version? Probably the deluxe ones, I guess, right?
The newest versions are the Blu-ray versions, where Obi-Wan does this crazy yell as the crate dragon. Oh, R2's right. Hiding behind a rock.
And doesn't Vader, at the end of Return of the Jedi, say no, or something like that, before he throws the Emperor down the shaft?
Yeah, no, no, no!
I'm gonna have to report that as soon as I see it, because I have no idea which one they're gonna show. It'll be interesting to find that out.
Yeah, let us know.
That's on the Blu-ray version. Right. That's the Blu-ray special deluxe edition to the max.
Okay.
Edition to the max. I like that.
Have you ever seen the 16mm versions of Star Wars?
Yes, I have. In my hometown of Santa Barbara, they actually showed that version when they did these charity versions. I guess it was the they showed the original trilogy as a little marathon more than once, and it was done for a special reason. I can't remember the charity, but it was those versions that you're talking about.
Okay, I'm showing my age, but what is 16mm versus like the original?
It's a whole different sound mix.
Oh.
The sound effects are different. It's the cut before the ADR. So yep. a lot of the lines are read in a different cadence. Aunt Beru's voice is still played by Sheila Fraser.
So, okay, so 16mm has nothing to do with the size of the
screen?
No. Okay.
It's just a whole different sound mix.
Okay.
When I saw these versions at my local library that were showing the complete trilogy back in the early 80s, this is when Star Wars was just on cable, so it was running in a 24-hour loop. So the sound mix that was on cable was cemented in your head.
Right.
So any little adjustment, you were going to notice.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just coming fast and furious, all these different sounds, all these different line readings than what you were used to.
It's like listening to your favorite film music on a CD forever, and then finally going to see it like live, being played live, and all of a sudden it's like all these different instrumentations come out, because you're like, oh wait, the trumpets are louder there. Oh, they're doing that. Oh wow, yeah, I get it.
So yeah, you're gonna notice that.
Right.
So the lady in the back kept saying, "Would you shut up?"
When I saw it
in the library, uh-huh. I kept going, "Oh!" Lady kicked my seat. Would you shut up?
She's wondering like what kind of fit you were having.
It's like, hey, what is this, Horshack in front of me?
Nice reference.
Yeah. Timely. Now, will it annoy you if people do what I was doing and they start talking throughout the film when you see the marathon and start quoting lines and just shouting things a la Rocky Horror Picture Show?
No, not at all. I remember the last time I saw all six as in a movie marathon, and you may remember this, Richard, was the day before Celebration Los Angeles. They had all six, and I was there for that on that Wednesday. Not at all. I think it would actually be kind of fun, but I don't remember people yelling lines out. I do remember people bringing up their lightsabers at certain times, and then they would put them away when they knew they needed to.
Right.
But, you know, I would find it entertaining actually to see, especially if there's some kids there that have been watching it and younger than me and you know, maybe even acting it out down at the bottom of the theater or something fun like that. The other thing too is that this marathon that I'm going to starts at 4 a.m. on Thursday, December 17th.
Gosh. Whoa.
And that starts with episode 1 and goes through. So I'm expecting probably some people at certain times during the marathon taking maybe little naps from time to time.
Because, you know, get some snores.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm fine with that. If you're tired, go for it. We've all seen the movies, but I have a feeling that once Empire Strikes Back comes around, people are all going to be awake. And that's another reason why I'm looking forward to seeing Return of the Jedi, is because we know what movie's coming next. And with all of the books that are out now, you know, Aftermath and these that take place right after Return of the Jedi, you now can see this, see Return of the Jedi in a different light.
Oh, very much so, especially if you read Aftermath.
Yeah. Like, well, even Lost Stars, I mean, oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's like watching the Clone Wars and then watching the prequels. They just they take on a whole new meaning now.
Yes, yes.
Now, what survival techniques are you going to be planning?
Yeah, 13 hours.
Yeah.
Coffee? Well, actually, I'd like to refer your listeners to your episode 70, Skywalking to Celebration, your personal survival guide. There's the reason why I say that is there's some good tips in there. I actually spoke with the theater about what we're allowed to bring in and what we're not.
Oh, okay.
And I recommend that before I get into my tips, I recommend that if, for those of you that are listening that are doing this marathon around, in your selected theaters around the country, is check with your theater first what you're allowed to bring in. As we know, some theaters aren't allowing costumes and lightsabers. Some are. For me personally, and I checked with the manager when I bought the tickets. I said, we're going to be in your theater for a very long time, and we can't just live on popcorn and soda alone. What if you have special dietary needs? She said to me, look, don't worry about it. Just be subtle about what you're bringing in. You know, just put it in a bag. We're only going to check your bags for weapons, which is, you know, that made me feel safe. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But one of the things, and I've done these marathons before, is bring a pillow. Bring a sweatshirt or a jacket, because it does get colder in these theaters. Even though you'll be around people, and there will be that air conditioning on there. And also bring maybe an empty water bottle with you, in case you need to fill up on some water or something like that. Because obviously you can't keep getting soda all the time. But if you do get food at the theater, I recommend getting the large combo pack, which gets you the popcorn and the large drink, and you get a free refill with that. And then maybe just get water after. Don't drink soda the whole time, but hold on to your cup. And I would also bring maybe an extra shirt. Maybe even bring some deodorant.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I would bring an extra shirt.
Do people come in their jammy pants?
Yes, I have seen that. I remember actually
a
friend of mine, when we went and saw the extended Lord of the Rings trilogy, they had brought their jammy pants. Yeah, you bring slippers, you might not want to wear your laced tennis shoes all day, or slip on something, slip on shoes of some sort. And obviously bring things bring some earplugs in case you do plan on taking a nap. Bring something if you might get a headache or something like that. Something you can fit into a backpack. Your pillow you can keep on the outside, obviously, but I do recommend a pillow. But yeah, there's other little things like that. Mints.
So now, are most of these tips what you have learned on your past marathons?
Oh, yes. Yes. And a part of it's too because of my experience with conventions. I used to go to conventions before I started working the conventions, and now I'm going to the conventions as a fan. That all little things like that kind of combine together when you're in an enclosed space with a lot of people for a very long time.
So yeah. I'm guessing pop-up tents are a no-no.
No, not at all. But like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw people bring pillows, and if they want to lie down somewhere to take a nap, they go off to the side of the theater somewhere. I wouldn't be surprised if I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of things do the movie marathon itself, do they give you extra stuff with your ticket?
Actually, yes. They usually come with some type of movie swag. And a lot of the time you get a really cool lanyard with a cool badge that has the event on it. I'm looking over at my wall right now, and I can see my collection of all of the marathons I've done, including the Indiana Jones ones and the Hobbits and I even see the Die Hard and the Batman one hanging over there. And sometimes they'll give you a special poster or a pin. They haven't announced what they're giving away for this particular marathon, but I'm sure there'll be something.
Yeah, we're looking over here at our wall, and it's full of medals from a different kind of marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ones that those aren't the marathons I like to participate in.
Little different.
Mine are hosted by theaters or Netflix.
Ours are Run Disney. That's funny. Those are some pretty good tips. I wouldn't have thought of earplugs, but yeah, if you do need a break, it's probably a good idea.
Yeah, well, I was going to mention to your listeners that if anyone has any questions, they can always contact me. But it's so funny because when I tell people that I'm doing this marathon that have not done it, they look at me like I'm crazy. And I get that response all the time. When I look at it, the first time I marathon was with Star Wars. So it just seems fitting.
Well, I'm so glad that you have all this knowledge on movie marathons so you can tell other people about it, because I have a feeling a lot of people will be walking in just empty-handed. All right, I'm ready to go without thinking this through.
Exactly.
And so making everyone else uncomfortable.
And I'm, like I said, double check the theater. Some theaters will let you leave to go out to your car and maybe get something, especially if you got some medication that you need to take. That's why a lot of those theaters have those lanyards. So all you have to do is when they see the lanyards, they know that when you're coming back into the theater that you're part of that group.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, if the Skywalkers do want to reach out to you and ask you questions about the marathon or marathon tips, how can they reach you on social media?
Well, I'm Spartan_Phoenix on Twitter and now on Instagram. I reactivated my old Instagram account, and so I'm Spartan_Phoenix on both Twitter and Instagram. And they can also reach me on Facebook, Kevin Raider Nerd Reitzel, or also check out my Spartan Phoenix movie blog on Facebook.
Awesome. Yeah. Now, if any of you other Skywalkers out there who are listening want to share any tips, please also tweet us at SkywalkingPod.
All right, Kevin. Well, thank you very much. And we're going to want to hear all about your movie marathon experience the week after.
Well, I will also be doing some live tweeting during it and updates and some pictures and stuff. I'm going to be on social media. I'll make sure that I tag you guys as well, so you'll have have some fun to look at as well.
Yeah, you know, that'd be great.
Bring your laptop into the theater with you, and we'll watch the movie along with you and your friends, and you can tell us what's going on.
There we go. I'm sure that'll be allowed.
Yeah, not at all annoying. That same lady will be in the right in back and be going, "You again?" All right, Kevin. Well, thank you very much, and once again, we look forward to hearing all about your movie marathon experience.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you guys having me on again. It was a pleasure, and I just want to say shout out to Team Hoojib.
That wraps up episode 102. Are we saying 102 or 102? 102, I like better.
102. Okay.
That wraps up episode 102 of
Skywalking Through Neverland.
We would like to thank composer Tom Amin and Kevin Raider Nerd Reitzel for his survival tips when it comes to the Star Wars Saga movie marathon.
So jealous. Now, next week, we're going to have line updates from Hollywood, California, right outside of the hub of all theaters, the Grauman's, nope, the Mann's,
nope,
the TCL Theater.
Chinese Theater. Yes.
Okay, then the TCL Chinese Theater. They keep dropping the word Chinese and bringing it back. Is it Grauman's? Is it...
Whatever.
Yeah. Let's just call it the Star Wars Theater. So we're going to have line updates outside of the Star Wars Theater from the fans outside waiting to see The Force Awakens. So I'm sure you'll hear a lot of very familiar voices, including ours as we wait 24 hours in December.
I know. Oh my gosh. Ah. All right. Well, Skywalkers, you've been asking for it. So next week, we continue our classic Marvel Star Wars comic segment with Star Wars artist Randy Martinez. And we'll conclude the movie adaptation. So what is that, number six?
Number six.
Number six, wow.
And from here we see where the EU was born within the Marvel Comics when the Star Wars saga continues with everyone's favorite bunnies. Not the Hoojibs.
No?
But Jackson.
Oh, the green bunny.
The green bunny with the Mark from Orc spacesuit.
Awesome. Oh, wow. Does he have rainbow suspenders?
No, it's just pretty much red unitard and it stops there.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. That one.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. And Richard.
Yes, yes.
We should notify our Skywalkers. We've been on some things.
Yeah, I was just a guest on Teresa Delgado's show, Fangirl Chat.
Mm-hmm.
There's an inconsistency there because I'm not a girl, but she allowed me on.
You're an honorary fangirl because you were the one who wanted to see Peanuts. And Trisha Barr and I didn't see it, so there you go.
We had a review on our last episode, 101, but Teresa and I really delve into the movie. Since she's a big fan, I'm a big fan. So we had a great discussion on all things Peanuts.
Yay! And in the next couple weeks, we will put out a new episode of Fangirls Going Rogue, which there will be a very special new announcement on there. So,
does that announcement tie in with our announcement we teased at the very beginning?
It might. It okay. might.
Thanks, Han.
But there's no time to discuss this as a committee.
Mm-mm.
So, be sure to listen to Fangirls Going Rogue on Rebel Force Radio Network. And everyone, we have our BB-8 t-shirt designs available at TeePublic. I know a lot of you partook in the sale over this holiday weekend, so thank you very much. We have our BB-8 Mickey Ears design and our Christmas in the Stars BB-8 design.
Thank you to everyone who sent in pictures of yourselves wearing your new shirts.
That too, and our Skywalker of the Week shirts as well.
Yeah, Eric Warren sent in a picture of himself wearing his Skywalker of the Week shirt, and now Matthew Clifton is part of that group.
Uh-huh, and there was some other Skywalkers who sent in pictures too. It was very exciting. We love when you tweet at us or Facebook us and share your new acquisitions. And I've heard that in the line, the Hollywood line, some people have bought nice hoodies with, like, the BB-8 Mickey ears or the Santa BB-8s. The Santa BB-8 design with the snowflakes. It's so cute.
It's very, very cute.
It's cute.
Aww. It'll be so much fun to see them out on the streets.
Yes, yes. And, so we thank you so much for getting those, and they are available at TeePublic. So if you head to our website, skywalkingthroughneverland.com, you'll see buy BB-8 shirts right there, and that'll take you right to where you need to go to get all our t-shirts, not just the BB-8 ones. But that seems to be a big seller, so.
And they make great stocking stuffers.
Yes, they do. They kind of beef up your stocking, too.
Yes.
You roll them up just right. Looks like there's a lot in there. Hint, hint.
Good to have around the holidays where it gets an all-time cold of 75 degrees out in Long Beach.
Well, you know what? We do have, there's our kids' t-shirts available, and there's been quite a few of those being bought. So those are good stocking stuffers for the kids, too.
This year, kids won't want the toys. They'll want Skywalking Through Neverland shirts.
I know. And, okay, so I also want to bring up here that Her Universe has been an incredible sponsor. And when you guys click through those links for Her Universe and buy things, we get a nice cut of that. So thank you so much for those who partook in the Her Universe sale over the Black Friday craziness.
All that partaking goes right back into the show.
Absolutely.
Giveaways and mailings and
paying for the show. So, yeah.
So thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, social media for the show, as you know, on Twitter, we are at Skywalking Pod, and on Instagram, we have at Skywalking Pod. So please follow us there. We've gotten quite a few followers over the past week.
I learned Instagram.
Richard's going to be posting on that. I am still at Jedi Tink on Instagram. And on Facebook, we are Skywalking Through Neverland. And of course, if you want to email us, please email share@skywalkingthroughneverland.com.
So, is there anything else to be said right here?
Not right? No? Okay. Not anymore? That's a hint.
So while you're mulling that one over, remember this.
Neverland on Alderaan.
Some imagination, huh?
good night, Sussex, Wisconsin.
To our Skywalkers and Tweetwalkers, thanks for listening. Have you left an iTunes review yet? Skywalking Through Neverland is created and produced by Richard and Sarah Woloski. Segment producers are Dave Parfit, Dave Scale, and Norma Heitman. Original music by Rob Dellinger. Creative consultant, Mark Ogushewitz. Technical advisor, Peter Heitman. Facebook administrators, Donald Wicks and Joey Pittman. Skywalking Through Neverland is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. Sounds, music, and clips played during this podcast are the property of their copyright holders. All original content is property of Skywalking Through Neverland, copyright 2015. All rights reserved.
Sorry, it had to be said. And let's give a snap just so I can...
Okay.
One, two, three.
I can't snap.